Your Bible, if you'll open to Psalm 46, in just a moment we'll take our study together from this psalm of the Old Testament. If you're visiting with us, we're glad that you're here. If you're from our community, we invite you to come back and be with us anytime you have opportunity. If you are a new student who is in town, or you're an old student who's back in town as the college semester begins, we're glad that you've chosen to be with us today. We have a number of activities for college students that will be ongoing by the congregation here throughout the semester. We invite you to come and to be a part of those activities. We'll have our college welcome back kickoff devotional tomorrow night at 6:30 in our student center next door. If you're in college, we'd love to have you come and be a part of that devotional with us tomorrow night. We turn our attention this morning to Psalm 46. I'm thankful that Ben sang that last song that we sang together, that he led that song that we sang together, because it ties right into what we're going to be studying this morning, that God is our refuge. He is the rock, the place that we can turn for shelter and protection in the time of storm. The book of Psalms is a collection of divinely inspired Hebrew poetry. It contains 150 psalms written by a variety of different authors. The majority of the psalms are attributed to David. Others are attributed to Asaph, to the sons of Korah, to Moses, to Solomon, or to some other writer. Psalm 46 is one of the 10 or 11 psalms approximately that are attributed to the sons of Korah. And so we're going to turn our attention there and see what this psalm teaches us about God who is our refuge. It's only 11 verses, so let's read the 11 verses together and then we'll draw some things from the psalm. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her, she shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice, the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us, the God of Jacob is our refuge. Come, behold the works of the Lord, what desolations he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. By way of introduction, let's notice three things about an overview, or three things in general about the psalm, and then we'll focus our discussion in on the fact that God is our refuge. First of all, think about the occasion of the psalm. What occasioned the psalmist to pen these 11 verses? What was the background? What was going on? Well, we don't have the exact background or the exact context in which it was written. The most probable historical background for this psalm likely is God's deliverance of Jerusalem from the Assyrian army in the time of King Hezekiah. You can read that history. You can read the account of how God spared Hezekiah and the city of Jerusalem three different times in the Old Testament. You can read its account in 2 Kings, chapters 18 and 19. You can read that account again in the book of 2 Chronicles in chapter 32. And then you can read it in Isaiah's writing and his prophecy in Isaiah 36 and 37, as Isaiah was prophesying during the time of Hezekiah. But what you have during that setting is Sennacherib, who is the king of Assyria, has conquered the northern kingdom of Israel and carried them away into captivity. And now he has turned his sights on the southern kingdom of Judah, particularly on its capital city of Jerusalem. And he's intending to conquer Jerusalem the way that he has conquered Samaria and the northern kingdom of Israel. And so he sends his representative, his spokesman, Rabshakeh, down to Jerusalem. And he comes and he speaks to Hezekiah and the people of the city of Jerusalem. He is there to ridicule them because they're trusting in the God of heaven. They're trusting in the true God of Israel to bring their deliverance. And so he will ridicule them and compare the true God of Israel to the gods of these other nations that they've conquered. And Rabshakeh is confident that the Assyrians will be able to conquer Hezekiah and will easily be able to conquer the God of Hezekiah because they've been successful in all of these other campaigns. And so you have, when you read that history, you have King Hezekiah and Isaiah the prophet who both beseech the Lord in prayer. And they're praying that God would be with the nation of Judah and with the capital of Jerusalem, and that God would spare them, that God would deliver that city. In fact, 2 Kings 19:19 says that King Hezekiah prayed that prayer of deliverance, that all the kingdoms of the earth would know that God alone was Lord, that He alone was God, that He alone was sovereign. And so the deliverance wasn't just about delivering Jerusalem. It was about declaring to the world the person and the power of God, that He alone was the true God of heaven. Well, after Hezekiah and Isaiah offered those prayers, there was revelation given to Isaiah that God had heard the prayers and that He would grant deliverance. And that very night, an angel of the Lord went out into the camp of the Assyrian army and smote 185,000 of their soldiers. The next morning, when the rest of the army awoke, they saw their dead comrades. They immediately gathered their things and they returned to Nineveh, the capital of Assyria, and there Sennacherib was killed by his own sons. And so it seems to be that the psalm is a reflection on those events, a reflection of the approaching of the Assyrian army, and then a reflection on how God delivered Judah, delivered Jerusalem from that coming army. Let's outline the psalm. It naturally divides itself into three different sections. Each section ends with a Hebrew word that has been transliterated for us. It wasn't translated, but they just substituted English letters for the equivalent Hebrew letter. And so at the end of verse 3, at the end of verse 7, and at the end of verse 11, you'll see this word Selah, a transliterated Hebrew word. It means something like pause. And so it is an instructional phrase for the reading or the singing of the psalm. And so when you come to that word, it means to pause or to break before moving into the next section. Each section of this psalm identifies God is our refuge. That's the way section 1 begins, verse 1. God is our refuge. It is the way section 2 ends, verse 7. The God of Jacob is our refuge. It's the way section 3 ends. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Section 1, verses 1 to 3, is a section of identification. In this section, the psalmist identifies the God of heaven as our person of refuge, and then he identifies what our responsibility is or how we should respond to that. Because God is our refuge, verse 2, we should not fear. We should be people of confidence, people of comfort, because we have in God a place of refuge. Section 2 runs from verse 4 down to verse 7. Section 2 is a section of information. And in this section, the psalmist informs us that God is in the midst of His people and that He is there for their protection and for their help. And then section 3, verses 8 to 11, is a section of invitation. And in this section, the psalmist is inviting us to behold the works of God that He might be exalted and that we might come to know Him. Likely, this was an invitation for the inhabitants of Jerusalem to go out and to see the destruction of the Assyrian army, to see those bodies that were lying, to see all of the things that had been left behind as Assyria quickly fled back to Nineveh. And that would be, seeing that devastation, that destruction, would be undeniable proof that the God of heaven was Israel's refuge, was Jerusalem's shelter, and was their protection. But what is the purpose of the psalm for us? What's its outcome? What is this psalm designed to do? What's its intended purpose? This psalm is designed to help us to see that the Lord is present with His people. It's to help us to understand what it means when we trust God in times of difficulty and in times of change. It's to help us to understand who the Lord is to those who trust in Him, who the Lord is to those who are His people. The psalm is about us, verse 8, beholding the works of the Lord. The psalm is about us, verse 10, coming to know Him and to exalt Him so that we will, verse 2, not fear. So let's turn our attention to what this psalm says about the fact that God is our refuge. Let's begin in verse 1. There is in verse 1 one word that really identifies or really describes to us why we need a place of refuge, why we need a place of shelter, why we need a place of security. And the word is trouble. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. That's a Hebrew word that appears 73 times in the Old Testament, 24 times in the book of Psalms. It is variously translated trouble, distress, anguish, tribulation, or adversity. And so the psalmist is reminding us that in this life there is trouble. There are problems. Well, what he's declaring is something that we have come to know, come to learn by the experience of life. We've experienced that life is full of trouble, that it's full of problems, it's full of adversity, and because it is, because life is filled with trouble, we need a place to go in the midst of that trouble. We need a place to go during those storms, a place where we can find shelter, a place where we can find refuge, a place where we can find solace and protection. Think about the problems of life. They are perpetual, aren't they? The problems of life come over and over and over again. The problems of life might come in different shapes. They might appear in different sizes. They might affect us in differing degrees, but they are there perpetually, over and over and over again. We might find ourselves in a temporary reprieve or a temporary release from trouble, but we can be certain that the way life is, eventually those troubles, those problems, that adversity will once again creep into our life. Remember what Job said in Job 14 and verse 1, "Man that is born of woman is of few days and full of trouble." The term "full" that Job uses there in Job 14:1 is a term that means satiated or saturated. And so when Job looked at life and when he described it, he said it's something that is saturated, it's filled to the top with adversity and difficulty and trouble and problems. The psalmist would say in Psalm 25 and verse 17 that the troubles of his heart were enlarged. That is, that they were wide, that they were broad. And so when you think about the troubles of life, they are perpetual. They come time and time and time again. Might be a temporary reprieve, but eventually there's going to be trouble that creeps back into life. It might be physical trouble like sickness or disease. It might be a mental struggle. It might be emotional struggle. It might be relationship struggle. It might be suffering because of our faith or our dedication to God. But you can be certain that life will be full of trouble, full of problems. Well, those problems that we face in life are painful. It can be painful to experience and to endure the various problems of life. When you read Psalm 25, verses 17 and 18 in particular, the psalmist is approaching God about his problems, and one of the things that he says is he describes the pain that he's enduring. He says, "Oh, the troubles of my heart are enlarged. Oh, bring thou me out of my distresses. Look upon my affliction and my pain." There is, with problems of life, physical pain sometimes. We might be facing some kind of illness, some kind of sickness, some kind of disease, and that physically hurts our body. There's physical ache and physical pain that are associated with the troubles of life. But there is then emotional, mental anguish, mental suffering that comes from facing the problems of life. We feel battered. We feel broken. We feel grieved. We feel sorrowful. We feel burdened. And so there's this mental anguish and this mental pain. When you read through the book of Psalms, you're reading a book of emotion, and you're going to find the individuals who wrote these Psalms experiencing the whole gamut of human emotion. Any emotion that you felt in response to problems or troubles in life, you're going to find that those who wrote the book of Psalms experienced them also. For instance, the problems of life might leave us feeling tired and broken. Psalm 6 and verse 6, the psalmist said that all night he made his bed to swim, he watered his couch with his tears. Well, there's a man who's feeling broken and undone. It might be that the painful problems of life leave us feeling betrayed. The psalmist said in Psalm 41 and verse 9, "Yea, mine own familiar friend in whom I trusted, which did eat of my bread, hath lifted up his heel against me." Here was one of his close companions, someone who was very dear to him. They had shared meals together. And now because of some difficulty in life, that individual had turned away and he felt betrayed. Maybe we've been in that situation. The painful problems of life might leave us feeling alone. Psalmist said in Psalm 25, 16, "Turn thou unto me and have mercy upon me, for I am desolate and afflicted." King James, the ESV says, "I am lonely and afflicted." Maybe it is because we're experiencing something in life that is how we feel. We're pained, we're burdened with loneliness. Painful problems of life sometimes lead to anxiety. They lead to worry. Psalm 38 and verse 8, the psalmist talks about how he was full of heaviness. He talked about, rather from Psalm 38 and verse 38, that he had roared by reason of the disquietness of his heart. The disquietness of his heart. You think about a time of peace, then your heart's quiet, there's nothing going on. But you think about a time of anxiety, there is within your heart disquietness. There's all kind of sound and noise and worry and anxiety. That was the psalmist. It might be that the painful problems of life leave us feeling hopeless. Psalm 69 and verse 2 is a sad picture of hopelessness. The psalmist says, "I am in deep mire where there is no standing. I am come into deep water where the floods overflow me." Listen to his graphic description of being in a place where he felt hopeless. And it might be that because of the troubles and the difficulties of life that we find ourselves in a similar situation. The painful problems of life can leave us burdened. He talked about in Psalm 69 and verse 20, Reproach hath broken my heart. I am full of heaviness. And he talked about how he looked for some to have pity, but there was none. He looked for comforters, but he found none. When you think about the problems of life, how they're perpetually there and they cause us physical and mental anguish and pain, we need a place of refuge. We need a place where we can go for comfort, a place we can turn for solace and for security, a place where we can take our burdens and give them to someone who will aid us, someone who will help us. So after the psalmist talks about our problems, he points to us in this psalm the person who should be our place of refuge, the person to whom we should look for comfort and aid and help in the troubles of life. The psalm begins with this information. The psalm ends with this information. The information is right in the middle of the psalm in verse 7. The person of our refuge is God. He is our refuge, verse 1. He is the God of Jacob who is our refuge, verse 7. He is the God of Jacob who is our refuge, verse 11. Two different terms, Hebrew terms, are used in this psalm to describe God as our refuge. They're translated variously, but they mean this. They mean something similar. There are four things said about God in this psalm that help us to understand who He is as our refuge. The first two are about His provision, and then the second two are about His position. But four statements in this psalm about God. The first one is that God is our refuge. It's mentioned in verse 1, it's mentioned in verse 7, and it's mentioned also in verse 11. Two different Hebrew words are used here, and both translated refuge. The first one is found in verse 1. It's a term that means a shelter or a rock of refuge. The second one is found in verse 7 and in verse 11, and it means a high tower, a fortress, a stronghold. And so you have in both of these Hebrew words a picture that God is a dependable place of refuge, that He is a dependable place of shelter when everything else in life tends to be falling apart, that He is a place where we can find refuge. He is a rock under which we can hide from the storms of life. He is the stronghold in which we can find protection. He is the fortress where we can go, where we will be guarded against the problems of life, where He will help us to bear through them. He is our refuge. The second picture of God in this psalm is found in verse 1, that He is not only our refuge, but He is our strength. The term strength is only found there in verse 1, although there are some other pictures in the psalm of God's strength and how God is the strength of His people. Consider verses 4 and 5. There is a reference there to God, who is in the midst of a river, in the midst of a city of His people. And because God is in the midst of that river and in the midst of that city and that river will not be moved. It will not be overcome. And so that's a reference to His strength because He is there. Then there is verses 8 and 9, another reference or an allusion to the strength of God. Because of who He is and His power, His strength, He has made wars to cease. He has broken the bow. He has broken the spear asunder. And so those things require power and they require strength. And because God has been able to do that, then you have reference to the fact that He is our strength. Here was, put it back in its historical context likely, here was the city of Jerusalem, the nation of Judah, about to be conquered by the Assyrian army, and because they trusted in God, He was their strength. He was the one who fought for them. He was the power that delivered them from their enemy. Two things then are said in the psalm about God's provision. He is our refuge, our place of shelter. He is our strength. Then there are two things that are said about God in this psalm that are in reference to His position. The first one is found at the end of verse 4. God is in this psalm called the Most High. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. This term for God first is found in the book of Genesis, in Genesis chapter 14, where we're introduced to Melchizedek, who is the king of Salem, and verse 18, the priest of the Most High God. It's a statement that means God is sovereign, that He is the supreme one. It's about His supremacy. It's about the fact that He is the exalted one and there is no one above Him. It's a statement that means He is the possessor of heaven and earth, Genesis 14, 19. And so when we're turning to God for refuge, we're turning to a place of strength, but not to a place of ordinary strength. We're turning to the strength of the Most High. We're turning to the strength of the supreme sovereign one who possesses not only earth, but who possesses heaven and earth. The one who spoke this world into existence is the one to whom we can turn for refuge, the one that we can turn for shelter and protection. He is the Most High. The fourth and final thing said about God in this psalm is found in verse 7 and in verse 11. And it is the fact that God is the Lord of hosts. He is the Lord of hosts. This is a term that's used commonly for God throughout the Old Testament. 245 times it appears on the pages of the Old Testament. Probably the most familiar one to you, maybe 1 Samuel 17, where David goes and stands against Goliath, and Goliath comes out and speaks with David, and David says to him, verse 45, "I am come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, whom you have defied." And so the term host here is a term that means a mass of people organized especially for war. It's a reference to an army. And so when you think about God, the psalmist says He can be your place of refuge. He can be your place of protection because He is the Most High, but also because He is the Lord. He is the commander of the host of heaven. And so that's how Judah and Jerusalem had been delivered from Sennacherib, because the God who commands the host and the armies of heaven had commanded His army to fight against the Assyrian army and to drive them away. We have in God a place where we can turn for refuge, a place where we can turn for protection, because He is the Lord of hosts. And in that position, there is no one who can successfully stand against Him. There is no enemy that can overcome Him. There is no one who can overthrow Him or defeat Him. And so why would we turn anywhere else for comfort? Why would we turn anywhere else for shelter and protection? You see, the reality is everyone has a place or a person or a thing that they turn to when times get difficult. Some people turn to alcohol or some other drug. Some people turn to friends or family, or they go to a secluded place to be alone. They have a place that they go. But the only true source of refuge, the only true source of shelter is presented to us in this psalm, and it's the God of heaven, the one who is our strength, the one who is the Most High, the one who is the Lord of hosts. Number three in this psalm, we've seen the problem, it's trouble, and because life is full of trouble, we need a place of refuge, and that is to be the person of God. But notice what the psalm says about the proximity or the closeness of this refuge. Because you have three different statements in the psalm about where God is in relationship to His people. The first one is found in verse 1, that God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. So God is present with His people. The second one is found in verses 4 and 5, that God is in the midst of His people. Verse 5, God is in the midst of her, that is the city of God. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. And then you have a third statement about where God is with His people. It's found in verse 7 and in verse 11, that God is with us. The Lord of hosts is with us. And the God of Jacob is our refuge. You know, there are times in life when we need to contact somebody. We need to get in touch with somebody because we need information from them, or we need their help, or we need their assistance. And so we pick up the phone and we call their number. No response, no answer. Goes to voicemail. We wait a few minutes, we pick up the phone, we dial their number, we call them back because we need their help, we need their assistance. Rings, rings, goes to voicemail. They're not there. We can't reach them. But the reality is that's never true with God. Never are you going to call upon God or turn to Him for refuge and not find Him. Because the psalm says He's present with His people. He is in the midst of His people. He's with His people. He is always there to hear our prayers, to be attentive to our needs, to hear our cries. He is there in the midst of His people. So we have this place then that we can turn for refuge. Hebrews 13 and verse 5, the Hebrews writer says, "Let your conversation be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have, for He hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee." Psalm 145 and verse 18, "The Lord is nigh unto them that call upon Him, to all that call upon Him in truth." He's nigh. He's close by. Philippians 4 and verse 5, Paul told the Philippians, "The Lord is at hand," meaning He's near. He's there in the midst of His people. He's with His people. So what you find in the psalm is the proximity of our refuge, that God will always be there. In fact, this phrase found in verse 1, that God is a very present help in trouble, can also be translated that He has found an exceeding help in trouble. That is, that He has proven time and time again to be a reliable place of comfort, a reliable place of refuge. And so when we're turning to the Lord for comfort, when we're going to Him for shelter, we're going to one who has proven over and over again that He is faithful to His people, proven over and over again that He is a place of protection and shelter. Finally, number four, what does God purpose? What does He intend to do as our refuge? The answer is found twice in the psalm. It's found in verse 1 and found also in verse 5, because God's purpose is to help His people. Notice verse 1, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. And then verse 5, God is in the midst of her, she shall not be moved, God shall help her, and that right early. God's intention, His purpose in being our place of refuge, the place, the rock under which we can hide, is He's there to help us. It's a term that means to aid. His desire is to aid us during the difficult times of life, to give us a place where we can go, where we can find comfort and shelter and protection that will allow us to bear up or to endure through the difficulty that life brings our way. Well, what kind of help does God have to offer? What kind of help can we find in His place of refuge? There is in His place of refuge the help of forgiveness. Psalm 86:5 says of God that He is good and that He is ready to forgive. When we're turning to God as our place of comfort, solace, security, we're turning to one who delights in forgiveness. We're turning to one who delights in giving mercy and grace. So if it is that we're burdened with the problem of sin, then we can turn to the Lord, and if we'll call upon Him by obeying Him, be willing to listen to His Word and to do what He says, then He offers in His place of refuge forgiveness. He offers in His place of refuge pardon, or we can stand in a right relationship with Him. In God's place of refuge, we find not only the help of forgiveness, but the help of comfort. 2 Corinthians 1 and verse 3, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and the God of all comfort." That's our God. The one who wants to provide consolation, the one who wants to provide encouragement, the one who, when our life is full of grief and sorrow and trouble, we can turn to Him and find comfort, consolation, encouragement to go forward. In His help, we not only find forgiveness and peace and comfort, but thirdly, in His place of refuge, we find peace. Philippians 4 and verse 7 talks about how He is the God of peace and that He can give us the peace of God which will rule our hearts. It's a peace that passes our understanding. Maybe it is that the troubles of life have us anxious. We're worried. Our heart is full of heaviness, full of unknown. We can in God find peace. Peace for the anxiety, peace for the worry, because He is the God of peace. What help can we find? We can find in Him the help of hope. If we turn to Him for refuge, there is a place of hope. The days may seem dark. We may feel like the psalmist that we're in deep mire and we're overflowing with the floods, but we can find in God a person of hope. Romans 15:13, He is the God of hope that we might abound in hope. Now, when you turn to God for refuge, when you turn to His rock of shelter, you're not finding there just a glimmer of hope. You're finding there an abundance of hope that we could abound and overflow with hope because of who our God is. His purpose is to aid. It is to help those who trust in Him. And then the psalmist answers the question, when is God going to aid or to help His people? If we turn to Him for refuge, when will He come to our deliverance? Notice verse 5, God shall help her, and that right early. It's an indication that God will aid His people. He will provide them the refuge that they need when they need it. He will never be late. He will never delay. He will always, always, always be there right early, just on time. The psalmist in this psalm tries to get us to focus our eyes on the God of heaven, that we might behold His works, consider who He is, that He might be known to us and exalted in our eyes, that He would be our place of refuge, that He would be our place of shelter, and that we would trust in Him, and in so doing, we would not fear. Verse 2, though the earth be removed, though the mountains be carried in the midst of the sea, though the waters roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake and the swelling thereof, doesn't matter to us. Why? Our trust is in the Most High, in the Lord of hosts, the one who is our rock, the one who is our strength, the one who is there to aid us and to help us. Where's your place of shelter? Where's your place of comfort? Where's your place of refuge? If it's anywhere other than the God of heaven, you have the wrong shelter. You have the wrong refuge. Why not this morning trust in the Most High? Trust in the God of heaven. Call upon Him in obedience. Give your life to Him. And when you trust in Him, you have the promise of this psalm, that God is present with His people. He's in the midst of His people. He's with His people to aid them and to help them, even when life is full of trouble. Maybe it is this morning that you're not a child of God. If you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, if you're willing to repent of your sins, to confess your faith in Him, we'll this morning baptize you into Christ for the forgiveness of your sins. Maybe it is that you are a child of God, but maybe the troubles of life have plagued you, left you burdened. Why not this morning cast your cares upon Him? Let Him be your place of refuge. Give Him the burden, and let Him give you comfort and peace that He promises. If you're in need of responding to the invitation, won't you come? As together we stand and as we sing.